Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome back to the Market Musings podcast, where we welcome back our first returning, I think, private investor, and that is Eddie. Hi, Eddie. It's good to have you on again.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me back.
No, it was good to speak last time, and I think the podcast got quite a number of listens. So, yeah, it's great to have you back and see where you are a few months down the line. And Kenny's obviously with us as well.
Yep. How you doing, Eddie?
Yeah, I'm very well, Kenny. Yeah, no, again, thanks for having me back.
Yeah,
appreciate the offer.
No problem. I actually wish I'd set this till 6:30 on a Sunday night, because I had to drag my large posterior away from the Man United Tottenham comedy show that was on. From a neutral point of view, it was just a fantastic game to watch. But if you're a Man United fan, dear me, I run a boys' football team, a 2005 team, and we're not the best in the world, far from it, but my boys have got more heart and soul than that Man United team put together, so they are. But anyway, we'll try and leave
how the mighty have fallen, eh?
Yeah, well, no. Listen, Eddie's an Arsenal fan, they're doing okay, I suppose.
Well, I was watching that game, Kenny, hoping both teams can lose, but that's not an option, so... I'm happy to watch a comedy show anyway. I've never seen anything like that, to be perfectly honest with you. And it makes me feel a little bit more confident about how Arsenal defend, even though we're pretty bad at it as well. So, there you go.
I think what makes it worse was the fact that there's no fans there. You know, it just seems to amplify all the errors, and because there's no distractions, you know, with crowd noise around.
Yeah,
just,
true.
Strange, yeah. Wonder if... Solskjaer will survive. I think he was in thin ground anyway. I've laboured on too much about football. Yeah, it's great to have you back on. Jeez. I think, as Matt was saying, that it's definitely been one of the most popular podcasts we had, I've ever had. I think it's in sort of 14,000-15,000 sort of listens or stroke partial listens.
Wow.
On Periscope alone. Yeah. Never mind all the other podcast platforms. So we'd hope to get you on sooner, but obviously, sometimes it's hard to pin three people down for a time that suits everybody. But we've got you back on now. That's the main thing. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about was this 1K challenge you've got going. Can you give us a bit of background on that and how it came about?
Yeah, of course I can. Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly quite big on charity anyway. I mean, I don't shy away from it if I ever see sort of any Just Giving pages or anything like that. I'm always quick to put my hand in my pocket and always happy to donate. But I always think it's very important to give back. And I suppose I've done particularly well, as we sort of discussed on the last podcast, and things have really changed for me. And one thing that's really changed is obviously the growing amount of followers, and some of them are fantastic. I interact with them on a daily basis, and they're a pleasure to speak to. Obviously can't say that about everybody on Twitter, but we'll come on to that. And I just decided that I wanted to sort of give something back, but not just give something back, also give the people that I speak to on a daily basis and that follow me and I interact with, give them something too. So when I do hit the 150, which obviously I'm still confident of doing, it's certainly been a tough little while since deciding to do that. But when I do, I mean, my plan is to firstly make everyone aware that I've done that, and so they can hit me with suggestions of charities that might be close to their heart, or charities that they are involved in, or whatever it may be. But I'm happy, rather than just me picking a charity that I normally donate to or whatever it may be, I'm going to throw it out there to the people who I speak to and the people that follow me, and just get as many suggestions as I can of charities that they want. From there, I will pick three. I'll pick three sort of at random, and then just do a poll on my Twitter, and then hopefully from there we'll get a clear and defined winner of who everyone would like the money to go to. And like I said, that would be a real sort of team thing that will probably spread a bit further than just my followers, because if there's a poll going, but like you said, it's when you do well, it's nice to give back. And yeah, that's certainly my plan with this one, to set myself a target I want to get to, and then when I hit that target, donate to charity off the back of it.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a good plan. I must admit, one of the most bizarre things I've ever done for charity in my life was I've not played for years because obviously kids have come along. I used to play bowls, and one drunken night we come up with this plan that we would, myself and my mate, would play bowls for 24 hours for charity.
Wow.
We started at 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and we played all the way through to 1 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon. Don't get me wrong, there was lots of alcohol involved, and there was some strange goings on in the middle of the night, but I mean, it was, I think I'm going back 25 years ago I'd done that, and I think we just raised shy of £1,000 overall. So I mean,
it's fantastic.
It was a great feeling when it finished, but it's absolutely shattered. You know, actually physically try to do something for 24 hours, and I couldn't understand. You're just playing bowls, it's a really slow sport, and you're like, who can you be so tired? But we actually walked 30 miles in the 24 hours as well, just going up and down the green. You don't think about things like that, but sometimes that's the best way, you know, something that's born out of a drunken night out. And everybody in the club got behind it. And I think we did talk about making it a yearly thing. But
oh, so you were actually a member of a bowling club?
Yeah, I was very good at bowls, yeah.
Oh,
I only gave it up maybe 10 years ago, really, when I started running the boys' football teams. I just dropped it. But I've been playing all my life, Mark. I've been doing it since I was 10 years old. So
right.
Yeah.
It's
a facade for drinking, Mark. You throw some balls and then you're in for a half, and then you go back out, and yeah, there's a lot of drinking involved with bowling, so there is.
Right. Okay.
But even you guys might be, I don't think you're going to be surprised and shocked, but even with me announcing the fact that I want to get to that target and I want to donate money to charity, I mean, I still got trolled. I mean, what can you say in this current climate and in social media at the moment that doesn't invite the trolls to come along? I mean, I've said that I'm going to donate a substantial amount to charity on hitting the target, and people have still managed to put a negative spin on it. I mean, it blows, honestly, it just blows my mind. And that was the disappointing part, I must say. And I was very excited to do it. And then when those sorts of comments came in, I suppose, like anyone, it puts you back into your shell a bit, and you start questioning, okay, wow, I mean, have I come across wrong? Have I said something that I shouldn't have said? Do you know what I mean? You start questioning yourself, when really you should be saying, hang on, like it doesn't matter what you guys think. It doesn't matter what you guys have to say. Like, I can donate 50 quid if I want to charity. Like, if you don't believe that's enough, that's nothing to do with me or nothing to do with you. Like, it's just, yeah, I mean, I just thought, I was shocked, should I say, that was still met with comments like that, should we say?
I think you'll get that no matter what you do, Eddie, in life. There's people that get they get a buzz out of negative spin and anything positive that's happening. You see it Twitter and anything in general on Twitter. So no, I would just ignore them. And you've got a plan, just crack on with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I tell you what, I don't know how rich Mark is. If you get your target and you donate £1,000, I'll chuck in £100. I'm not as rich as you. I'll give you £100 and you can up it. Mark, you may give them 50p or something.
that's a bit rude.
putting everyone on the spot here, but no.
Well, hang on. So what was the target, Eddie, that you wanted to
target?
To get to?
Yeah, I mean, the target, I want to get the portfolio to 150,000, and if I got the once I hit that, whether or not it goes down the next 5 minutes, it's regardless. We know the swings of the market. But what I said is, if my portfolio hits 150,000 and shows 150,000, I will donate £1,000 to charity of somebody's choice.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll jump on board with that. Sure.
Good. Yeah, there we go. And actually, a few people did respond saying that they'll get involved as well. So actually, we'll Yeah, with a bit of luck, we'll certainly have more than £1,000, and it will go to a worthy charity.
Yeah, we'll drum up a bit of interest for you. But all right, well, moving on then. Obviously, a lot's happened in 2 months in the old world of AIM and stock market in general. So, what have you been up to? Just give us a brief summary. I know there's a lot been on, but
yeah, no, very. Has it been 2 months? I didn't even realise it'd been that long. I'll tell you one thing to start with, and I've said this a few times. I am wiped out now, if I'm honest with you. I am drained. My battery level is zero. Like I said, I've done this 15 years, which we discussed on the original podcast, but I've never done it so full on that I've been on for since last 6 months-ish, 7 months maybe since COVID and furlough and everything like that, because it's allowed me to, because my business has been so quiet. And I take my hat off to all those doing it full time and all of those that do this on a daily basis, because genuinely, like, I cannot wait to get that next big win. I cannot wait to get a decent win and just take some time out, and however long that may be, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't, maybe longer, maybe less, I don't care. Just not to have to get up at 6:45 every morning. I know that's not early, but it's just a routine. I mean, getting up 6:45 in the morning, getting down to the computer, getting ready for the 7 o'clock RNS reports to come out, being on it from the moment the market opened till 4:30. Because as somebody joked with me the other day, and they weren't even wrong, you can't even go out and get a loaf of bread without knowing what's going on with your stocks, because that's how quickly something could come out that could affect your stocks, that could make them fall. So during that sort of 8 till 4:30 period, you've got to be so on the ball. And even after that, I'm researching stocks. I'm talking to people that I speak to on a regular basis, and I just feel like I'm constantly on my phone. I'm constantly doing something that's related to stocks. So the big thing for me is genuinely just, yeah, allowing myself a break soon. And I'm not quite there yet with where I want to be with a portfolio to have that break. But one decent win, and I'm certainly confident with the stocks that I'm in, one decent win should certainly allow me to do that. I mean, I don't know if you found that, both of you found that at all, that it gets a bit draining being on it 100% of the time.
No, absolutely.
I'm probably a different beast from Mark. I'm a bit more, I tend to thrive on the 7 days a week. I'd work constantly if I could, but occasionally I do have a meltdown. You know, something will just trigger it someday or something, and I throw my toys out of the pram. And I probably had a mini one on sort of Thursday, Friday, and yesterday was the first day in, I'm going to say this year, that I didn't turn the laptop on, which is unusual for me.
When yesterday?
Yeah, never. I had my phone, obviously, but never turned my laptop on, which is not like me, as you know, Mark.
No.
In fact, even last year was my 25th wedding anniversary. We went away for the weekend and took the laptop with me. And I still think I'd done 3 or 4 hours work in the morning. Well, wife was still in bed and sorting myself out or whatever. Morning. I don't know. I'm just addicted to it. And I think you'll find it hard to give up, Eddie. I know you say it'll be good to get away for 2 or 3 weeks. You would probably need to go somewhere where there's no internet, Australian outback, going to go away with Aboriginals for a couple of weeks or something like that.
You know what, Kenny? You've said to me what everyone has said to me, that I've said this is my plan. I mean, I think not one person has taken me seriously to start with, which I don't blame them. But yeah, no, you're right. It will be very hard to sort of come away from, because at the end of the day, the stock market is gambling. Gambling is addictive, and it's very addictive winning.
I think we talked about this offline after the last podcast. I mean, I know you're pretty much set up as a day trader. I probably won't have the time to sit and stare at the screen as much as I would like to. Although I must admit, in the last 2 or 3 months, I've tried to get my hand back in. Make some time. I mean, what about sort of diversifying your portfolio? You ever thought about maybe you know, going for some longer term picks and just maybe moving 25% of your portfolio into like a 6-12 month hold and taking some of the pressure off.
I think that's the end goal for sure, because at the end of the day, this isn't my main business. It never will be my main business. I have no ambitions whatsoever to do this full time. And like I said, I tip my hat to all of you, anyone listening that does do it full time, because I mean, you're just, it's incredible to A, be able to do it full time and to put that sort of effort into something that's so demanding. But the recruitment is my business. I have set it up. I do want to make a go of that. And that is certainly the end goal. When recruitment starts picking up, it will be moved into more long-term stocks. Might start looking at funds as well. But just trying to, protect the capital a little bit more. And I mean, I'm in six stocks at the moment, and two, three of them are long-term anyway. It's the other ones that I'm sort of having to watch and keep an eye on and dip in here and there and obviously buy new ones and come out. But there are stocks I already have that I have got no intention of selling for a year, maybe longer. And if I make money in other stocks, I'll just keep adding to those and growing that from there. But you've hit the nail on the head, Kenny. I've got to definitely find I'll never come out of it completely, because I enjoy it and I love the research side of things, and I love finding a share at the bottom of, and the start of its journey and watching it grow. So that will never change. But I suppose I just want to sort of come away from constantly looking at it from morning till evening. I think my brain's starting to be a little bit fried because I'm not used to doing that. It was funny. I put a poll out last week or maybe the week before about, because I was seeing a lot of posts. I don't know if you guys have seen it as well. I was seeing a lot of posts just coming up on my timeline of new investors saying that they wanted to give up full-time work and go into the markets full-time. Now, admittedly, that hasn't been in the last few weeks. That was 3-4 weeks ago when the bubble was still around, should we say. I think that has been an issue. I think the markets up until recently have really given people a false sense of security of how easy they think it can be or how easy it's to make money, seeing shares, multiple shares doing 40, 50, 60% in a day. I mean, you've seen a lot less of that recently, and actually it's the other way around. I mean, the markets, which I'm sure we'll come on to, have been very, very tough recently. But I did that poll, and I think it came out about 33% would give up their full-time position and go full-time trading, which actually was higher than I thought it was going to be, especially after the last sort of 3-4 weeks we've had. So there are obviously still a lot of people out there that have that plan, and good luck to them. I mean, I hope they do it and I hope they absolutely smash it. But I'm kind of glad we've had the last few weeks, because I think it's sharpened a few people up and made people realize, hang on a minute, the stock market doesn't just give. It yes. takes away as well. And when it takes, it takes in devastating fashion.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I made that jump about 18 months ago, and Mark's just made it recently. I mean, it takes a bit of balls to walk away from, well, my situation was it was a well-paid job. I could have done it for the rest of my life, no problem. But my brain wasn't getting taxed. When you're not enjoying it as much, you know, you start to look for issues that are not there. It was a very small office, 4 guys, no windows. It just became a labour, getting into work every day. And if somebody was in a bad mood, it's hard work, and you're stuck in that office all day. So that was the best thing I've ever done. And probably a few family members, you know, kind of, you're doing what? And I just went, well, do you know what? At that time, it was 46, I think, maybe just done 47. And I said, I'll do it now. I'm never going to do it. And I'd rather go and do it, bugger it up, and say, well, do you know what? At least I tried. You know, life's not a dress rehearsal. You've got to go for it. And I probably had a similar chance maybe 8 or 9 years ago to do something similar, and I didn't have the bottle for it. But I don't know, it just felt right this time. So I went for it. But No, it's a brave thing to do. You've got to have a fallback plan. I'm not saying I've got one, but you've got to admit, I could probably get back into the same line of work I was doing. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. But it's worked out well for me at the moment. So I just keep cracking the whip.
No, it's good. And like I said, I mean, good luck to anyone that does it. It just should not be off the back of, it should just not be a knee-jerk reaction off the back of what we've experienced the last X amount of months. It should be something that you've really sort of set your heart on and decided to do. Because what I am seeing at the moment, and yeah, maybe it might be Twitter and it's not a real true representation of everyone that's out there, I get that. But up until the last few weeks, it just felt as though there were just new investors picking shares. It was always the same shares over and over that they just believed a get rich quick. Do you know what I mean? Which there's no such thing as get rich quick. And some of these shares just flew ridiculous amounts. And if you had a decent amount, you'd make a lot of money. And there's, naturally, you're going to think it's easy. And that's why I did the first podcast. That's why I'm doing this podcast, to say it's not easy. And maybe the last few weeks have made people realize that actually it's a proper graft to nick some money in the stock market. It doesn't just come to you easily and naturally. It takes proper research, fundamentals of a company and the timing and selling of when you're going to buy and sell a stock. So you asked me how things have been, and this was one of the reasons I came back. It's been tough. It's been really, really tough. I'm down from when we last spoke. Because I think when we last spoke, the timing of it, I think my portfolio was at an all-time high. So I suppose it was never, unless things kicked on, it was never going to be higher than that. But I'm down. I was considerably down at one point. So just to put it in numbers, so I can be completely honest with everybody, I think the highest my portfolio hit, and it's all paper, I get that, I'm not stupid, but I think the highest my portfolio hit was about 120, 122. And that would have probably been around the time that I was talking about the sort of the charity challenge, probably a little bit less than that. The lowest it went to was last week. I think it hit 88 last week. So that's a swing, put myself on the spot here, but that's a swing of 34 grand, roughly speaking. And I wouldn't even say that was mainly on errors or bad buys or anything like that. It's just, again, what we discussed before. I'm very good at watching a share go up. And then I'm also very good at watching it go back down again, pretty much to the price that I paid, without selling anything and regaining any of the paper profits that I started with. I mean, last week for me was just mental. I mean, the swings I had last week, I think the portfolio had week on week just kept slipping away because the markets haven't been good. I mean, we all know that. There's so many different factors to why the market hasn't been good. Obviously, the biggest factor at the moment is certainly there's more a concern of COVID again. So that's always going to have an effect on the market. So they haven't been good. So a lot of shares are heavily down from their high periods from a month ago, maybe longer. And I've just slowly dipped for about 3-4 weeks. I don't remember having a week where I was up. It was, and I think my worst week down was about 10 grand. And last Monday, I started at 97 grand. And like I said to you, it hit its lowest point on Wednesday, or maybe even Thursday morning at 88. And I finished Friday, 4:30, close of play at 108 grand. I mean, that's a swing of 20 grand in a week. I mean, yes, I go in heavy. I don't have anything less than probably 10 grand, 15 grand in my 6 shares. So they are going to see bigger swings, but that's what you have to deal with. Do you know what I mean? That is an element that you being full time and going at it like I am, because if you're not watching it all the time, then those sorts of swings, you probably won't even see them.
No.
Because if you're disciplined enough just to buy stocks and tuck them away in the bottom drawer and come and look at them in a year's time or whatever it is, then those swings, you won't even know about them. But where I'm, like I said, on it, I'm seeing those swings, and yeah, they're mad. And
you're almost living the life of a stockbroker in the city. I remember reading an article, "Life of a Stockbroker," and he's just a young guy, younger than me probably. I don't know, in his sort of mid-20s. And he'd hardly see his partner. He'd get up at stupid o'clock, like 4 a.m, be in the office for like sort of 5 hours, prepare and stay there all day. And then after the market's closed, he was still there, you know, 2 or 3 hours after the market's closed, get back, have dinner, maybe sleep, go to bed with his partner and repeat it the next day. But you're right, if you're in that kind of game, you can't leave, because you're right, the swings will just happen. The kind of investing that I do is a little bit different. I'm not sort of, I would say, I'm not an in-and-out kind of guy. I tend to hold things for a bit longer. And I tend to go for companies that I feel quite relaxed with and understand what they're doing and sort of buy into a story. I think that's what I like to do, is buy into a developing story rather than sort of, you know, trade different swings. But yeah, each their own, you know. But yeah, you can't leave if that's the game you're in. And the pressure on you must be pretty intense. A friend of mine had his father was, that's how he made his living. He made his whole living from the stock market every day until he was about, I don't know, sort of late 40s, and then he thought, yeah, I've got to stop now because it's just too much pressure, and yeah, go for something a little bit more stable. But you know, he made his money, and then, you know, I mean, because you're not that old, are you? I guess so. You can do it for, you know, a few more years and not worry too much.
No, I'm 36. So yeah. I mean, older than most, younger than some. Like I said, yeah. I speak to a fair amount of people on Twitter who are of all different ages, and some are as young as 19, 20, smashing it. And some are older. But yeah, I mean, I am living the life of a stockbroker, hence why I feel drained and have nothing but admiration. I mean, going back to what you said, Mark, how often will you check those shares that you...
I'll be looking at them all day. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
They'll be on my screen, but I would do my work on one screen and have the market on the other screen. But yeah, so I will be looking at it all the time, pretty much.
Yeah, and I'm probably, but see, everybody's different. I'm different approach as well. And I think we talked about this offline last time as well, Eddie. I made a conscious point, and as soon as I left my work and I started opening as many broker accounts, as not as many as I could, but I think I've got five, you know, so SI Capital, First Equity, Optiva, those kind of people. Mm-hmm. So that, and I take part in it. A few placings now. That's smacking a bit of my strategy as well. Preferably with wants attached. Wants are nice to have, because you can just stick them away in the bottom drawer, you know, forget about them, especially if they've got like a 3-year expiry. Typical example would be some of the guys that done the early placings in Greatland Gold. Some of those guys were probably getting wants at point, I'm going to say from memory, 0.3, 0.4 pence. I might be wrong, but I remember there was a place in, maybe 0.2 or something, Greatland. I can't exactly remember. But look where Greatland's went now. You know, that's a monster return if you'd managed to hold on to some of these early warrants. So is that something you ever looked at, Eddie? Because I know I think I'd phoned you once and we'd talked about it.
No, we had a chat, and actually it's funny you should say that. I did, and I registered with Turner Pope. Mm-hmm. So they've got my details now, and it is something that I'm looking into. I think it's I thought it was a great idea. If you genuinely believe in the company that they're approaching you about, who are having a placing, then I think it's a, like you said, it's a fantastic opportunity to sort of get into a stock that, and I completely understand that sometimes the share prices go under that placing, but if they're placing, if there's a genuine reason behind what they're placing and not just because they're skint, then it's a great opportunity to get in with it. So yeah, for sure, it's definitely something that I've looked into since you said. But I mean, there's been some winners still. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've one company that I know you guys sort of we keep an eye on each other's Twitter. I mean, one company I'm sure you see me talking about a lot is Zoetic, Zoe, the CBD oil company.
Mm-hmm.
So I called that. It wasn't my tip, of course. I have good people around me, and discussions took place, and then I did my research. But I first bought into Zoe at 14p, and they're now trading at 32p. And I believe that they're going to go a lot higher than that. That's what we spoke about before, one of my bottom drawer shares, that money is going to be tucked away in them for a while yet, because they've just started out in their journey. But it's funny, because I've got a fair amount of money in them, but I saw paper profits disappear three times with them. I mean, like I said, first podcast I admitted I'm terrible at selling, and that will never change, and that will always be a weakness of anybody, because we're just greedy and we see a share going up and we believe it's just going to continue that way, and there's no way it's going to come back down.
That's the beauty of doing a placing and getting words, so you can take part in the placing. So for instance, last week I'd done North Shatera oil and gas.
Yep.
Placing's at 0.25 and the warrants are at 0.35. Now, obviously, I've not received the shares yet. I can't remember when the date is. I think it's 8th of October or something like that. But, you know, the share price, it was like 0.4 to buy last week. You know, yep. The warrants are already theoretically in the money. So my plan will be, I've got some good news flow coming out, hopefully. You know, I'll probably sell out, hopefully 0.6, 0.7.
Yeah,
and then I've got the warrants just sitting in my folder, and I can just keep an eye on it, and I can exercise them whenever I want. And that's, you've still got a bit of skin in the game.
Yeah,
you've done the placing, you've got your initial stake back, hopefully a bit more profit, and the warrants are there, and that gives you your interest. So it does, it allows you to move the capital into something else. So that's why I like warrants, and I tend not to get involved in placings unless I've got warrants, unless it's stupidly discounted. Mm.
No, very much so. And going back to Zoe, as I said, it went up to 24, 25p, then went back down to the price that I paid, then back to 24, 25p, back down to the price I paid. I mean, if I was on the ball and I was a trader, which I fail at miserably, I mean, I could have sold out of them three times and bought them back three times and made $5,000-$6,000 a time every time. But I just watched the profit dwindle every time and watched my portfolio yo-yo up and down, because it's one of my largest holdings. So I was literally just – and now there has been a breakout. I'm not saying for 1 second it's going to continue. But for me, I just liked everything about them. I liked the fact that they were, as I said – start their journey. CBD market is huge, getting bigger and bigger. I've tested their products as well, bought their chill gummies, which taste good. I'm sure they do chill me out, but I'm quite a full-on guy as it is, so it would take a lot to chill me out. But they've got some fantastic products. They're rolling out, they've rolled out in Europe and US already, but they want to roll out more, and they've got very good profit margins. So I see them at the moment as a potential huge business for me. For me, they could, I don't put price predictions, never have, and I won't. But for me, I feel that their journey has got a long way to go, and they could be a global brand. And if they are a global brand, I'll do very well out of that stock, that's for sure.
But would you not ever sort of consider, if it goes up 100%, selling half?
100%. 100%. And I stand by that. And I've said that on my Twitter. And I'm pleased you said that, Mark, because I'd have probably forgotten to say that anyway. But if I, and not necessarily 100%, but if you are in serious profit, I mean, it's just such a good idea to take your original stake out. I know that means you're not going to make as much profit as it keeps going up, because you've now got less shares, but you've got, let's say you invested 10 grand at 14p, it hits 28p, you've doubled your money, you take your £10,000 out, £10,000 is still in half your stock, and you don't have to, because the only way you're going to lose that money now is if the share goes down to zero. And the likelihood, if you've done your research, of your share going to zero and the company disappearing off the markets are pretty slim. So 100% Mark, I am a big believer of getting to that. My problem is that if you invest 20 grand into a share, for example, even if it goes up 40%, you're 8 grand up. And it's that point that you probably should be thinking, oh, I should take some out, but I don't. And that's probably my biggest weakness is I'm not, I tell others to be nimble, but I'm not nimble enough myself. So I need to learn to be a little bit nimble. I need to learn to take, but yeah, I believe in the rule of pulling your original stake out. If the share goes up.
Just as a cautionary word of warning, I just logged on to my SIP, which I've had for 12, 13 years, I think, with Hargreaves. And there's 6 shares that's suspended or delisted, and they still stick in my account. So I never say never. Now, some of those companies I thought would be around forever, and
you've got 6 companies in your SIP that are no longer trading.
Yeah, and they don't take them off. It's so bloody frustrating. Every time you log on to your SIP, and obviously I've got my active shares, but you've also got the ones that you still physically, you don't physically own the shares. It still appears on your.
But how are you still in them though? What did you forget or?
No, they delisted, Mark. So one of them was Maple Energy. I'm going back 2014 or something, and they just delisted. That was it. Suspended, delisted with some dodgy dealings and some.
So it's out of the blue.
Out of the blue. Sometimes you get warning signs. Sometimes you don't, Mark. And there's nothing you can do. There's absolutely bugger all you can do. So, I always take a pinch of salt. They can. They might not go to zero, but if they suspend for whatever reason, if it's, you can get an accounting issue. I mean, you think about what's the lorries that go up and down the country?
Eddie Stobart.
Yeah, I mean, they had a big accountant hoo-ha, so they did suspended for a while, and then as soon as they come back, they were down at 4 pence at one point. You know, they were almost wiped out. I think they've since recovered back up to, I don't know, is it 25 pence or something now, Eddie Stobart, from memory. But I should maybe screenshot some of these shares that have suspended, because I think it's good in a way, because it does remind you not to be gung-ho and gallus.
But in theory, they would come back to market, wouldn't they, or not?
No,
they won't?
Nah, they've gone. The companies went bust.
Oh, on the listing, it's been struck off. Okay, so it's completely...
Yeah, it's just gone.
Some do suspend to come back. I mean, look at EUA, Eurasia. I mean, they're absolutely flying now, and they're a company I'm invested in. I wish I was invested in them pre-suspension of the days of... under a P. I mean, Jesus, I'd be pretty pretty rich now. But I invested in them a few months ago when they were sort of sub 20p. They had a very good RNS this week with the interims, pretty much saying that the sale process is still on, and I'm in for the end game. It's like anything, I'm a gambler, I take a risk. So for me, I believe that they will be bought out. And I've got no idea what price they will be bought out for. I'm hoping a lot more than what I paid for them. They were suspended, and I'm sure at that point, just naturally, people with a lot of money in them, it's scary times. And also the other thing is your money's tied up, isn't it? So if it isn't necessarily a long term plan, the share that you've just bought, it all of a sudden turns into a long term plan, because you're not sure how long the suspension's going to be.
Yeah, I think it was actually a blessing for Eurasia, because obviously COVID hit as well, and it sheltered, their share price wasn't smashed like everything else. So by the time they come back to market, things were a lot better. I think when the Nomad resigned, I don't think the Nomad didn't resign, they changed their Nomad. I think that was a bit worrying for a few people, because if you don't get a Nomad back again, you can be suspended or potentially delisted, I believe. I'm not too clued up in that particular AIM rule. But it was good that they come back, because I think there was a few people with spooky bums, especially when the Nomad was gone. But I didn't notice it. I mean, obviously, I tend to invest in natural resources stocks, and
yes,
particularly mining, but I have been kind of moving into oil and gas. Oil and gas does scare me a bit, but I've been moving into it, having a look about and picked up a few bottom drawer stocks. But just going back to mining, I noticed a post that you'd picked up some ECR, which I have.
Oh, you're in the ECR. Excellent.
I am. Yes. Mm. Yourself, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Something that I've watched for a little while now, following people that I respect and their opinions that I respect, and seen a fair number of posts on them. I mean, I take my time before buying something. I don't just jump in, and if I miss certain prices, then so be it. But I'd certainly watched ECR for a little while, and I thought, I jumped in last week. Not a huge holding yet. Mm. I'm hoping a few other stocks will do well, and it will allow me to increase the holding. But I think they're, another company that are at the bottom of the curve, should we say, and could do very well. Well spotted. I'm in that, and there's a lot of people in that. I think a lot of people have got very high hopes for.
ECR a long time. We should probably do it again, Mark. We've done a Noisy Gold Hunters podcast probably about three months ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We covered ECR, we covered Cobra, we covered Power Metal / Red Rock Resources, we covered Thor, we talked about Greatland Gold, Rockfire Resources, Panther Metals. So we picked all the kind of AIM companies that were involved in the Australian sort of gold theme. I think I actually talked non-stop, Mark, for about 40, 50 minutes.
Which, you did.
There was a lot of beer involved that night, so there was. But no, I think we should revisit that. And ECR is one of the key companies especially in the area of Victoria.
I think there would be a lot of people that would be keen to listen to that if you did, for sure. I think that would get some good numbers, because that's certainly being noticed at the moment.
Aussie Gold is where it's at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, mining in general. I mean, I know you said oil and gas, Kenny. That is my big bugbear, and I think I've been burnt too many times, Kenny, to ever change that opinion. I mean, I'm sure there's many people out there that love it and do very well out of it, but I've only ever lost, and for me, that's just oil and gas is just not the route for me now.
I must admit, I'm like I say, I was quite surprised myself. I mean, obviously, I'd done the Nostra one, Nostra Terra, because I got involved in the placing. A couple of others that I've picked up was one called Advance Energy. At the moment, they've just recapitalized the business. The board has put in, I think, a total of 535,000. So I like that right away. They've got a lot of skin in the game. You know, that's not the shares that they've got have not been free shares. They've physically had to part with the cash. So for the board to part over £500,000, that was a big tick for me. And again, the market cap's only a couple of million, and the guy's very experienced. So I'd be a bit reluctant to buy into an oil company that was potentially drilling, because that really scares me, because an oil company can have £6 million in the bank and they go and drill a hole, which is a buster. By the time they've closed it all up and done all the environmental stuff, they've no money left. You know, it just disappears so fast. So, I've got a lot to learn in the oil and gas sector. But
it's funny you should say the word market cap, Kenny, because I feel that's a word that many people need to research and have a look at, because I see so many people talk about wild share prices that they believe that's going to go to without even remotely checking what market cap that could make their share that they're invested in. It's all well and good if your share is trading at under a penny to throw these crazy price predictions of 10, 15, 20, 30p. But you need to look at the market cap if that company did hit 10p and what that would be. And if we're talking market caps bigger than some of the world leading banks and bigger than some of the largest companies out there, then you're just deluding yourself and taking others with you. I mean, market cap really is something that any investor that wants to put money in a share and really needs to look at the market cap of a company before they throw their money into it, to make a decision whether or not the company is undervalued or overvalued. And don't get me wrong, I'm fully aware that AIM is all potential, so the market caps are overblown. I know that. We all know that. But if they don't sustain that market cap after a certain amount of time, then that's just a shorter's dream. And there are some unbelievable shorters out there that can find a company who have a completely overblown market cap and take it to the cleaners.
Yeah, well, you've got to look at it sort of fully diluted market cap as well. So you might have a company that's got 250 million shares in issue, but there could be, 200 million warrants sitting in the background as well that you've not accounted for. And if the share price is going to, double, triple, and the warrants and the money, they will be exercised. I mean, obviously, it's a double-edged sword. The company will get the money from the warrant exercise, but it's obviously going to push the market cap as well because there's more shares in issue. So there's loads and loads of factors when you're looking for shares that you've... And everybody's different, what their approach is. We should maybe really do, Mark, one, maybe invite yourself on, Eddie, and maybe another... we could maybe get Doc Holliday on or something like that. We could have a top 10, what people are looking for when you invest in a company. One of my big ones is skin in the game. And how the director's got that skin in the game. Is it in lieu of wages or they physically put their hands in their pocket?
Yeah.
Obviously, Advanced Energy, I talked about them earlier on. The director's put up $500,000.
Yeah.
One close to my heart, obviously, Power Metal Resources. Paul Johnson, I think, stuck in about $250,000 of his own money as well. So there's, I think in these troubled times, I think that's a big tick. But that's maybe something for another podcast to think about.
No, definitely. And Doc Holliday, I speak to, and he's a great guy. He does a fantastic podcast that everybody should be listening to themselves because it's very different to certainly what I do. I mean, I'm not here to cover individual stocks and give you my opinions, but he certainly does. And he gets it right more than he gets it wrong, though. He certainly gets trolled a lot like we all do. I'd definitely be up for that. But skin in the game is huge. It's huge. And I was told that very, very early on. The directors have got to be buying in. They have to, because if they don't believe in their own company, how are you supposed to believe?
Yeah, there's some companies I've looked at and the CEO has not got a single share. And you're like, what's he even there for? What is he? To me, it's a big red flag for a lifestyle company or whatever. I'm not saying that's always the case, but if I was going to be the CEO of a listed company, no, I'd want to be aligned with my shareholders. I'd want to be, in the same boat as them, rowing in the same direction, whatever you want to call it. But there's some out there that are just there for the money, unfortunately. And it's a merry-go-round. They fall out of one company and they fall into another.
Yeah.
Or they might have three or four going at the same time. So you've got to look closely. So ECR, that caught my eye the other week. And, like I say, I'm pretty hopeful with ECR as well. But obviously, there's a couple of potential joint ventures, stroke earnings on the cards. It's been knocked back by COVID situations in Victoria.
Yeah, that's what I'm in for exactly. I know they're entering a news-rich period, certainly in the joint venture side of things. And like anything, nothing is guaranteed. So anyone thinking, I'm going to go look at ECR now, I'm going to throw money in. Yeah, great. I mean, we're all hoping it's going to do very well, but... you've got to be aware that if the joint ventures don't come to light, then the share price will drop and potentially considerably from where it is now.
I think I'll need to dig out. So I do a lot of research in Australia. I don't know if you know much of my background, Eddie, but I know a lot of the mineral mapping systems inside out, and I can pull out historical reports just about for any of the states in Australia. So I'll need to dig out my tweet about on the Cresic. license, which is obviously one of the licenses that they're hoping for an adventure stroke earning. There's a gold lead called Sulky Gully, and in that particular gully there is a historical nugget that was found. What size do you think it was, Mark? Do you know? Gold nugget. Go and throw a number in there, Mark.
What, a gold nugget that was found?
On the Kresik license footprint.
A nugget, 10 kilogram what? Nugget? I don't know.
Well, go for ounces. Everybody knows ounces.
Oh, ounces. I'm no good with ounces. I'm a metric man.
All right. Eddie, what do you think? What do you think is a reasonable size nugget to find?
What is about 34, 35 ounces in a kilo, something like that? Is that right?
Have I got my metric right? Yes, 31 grams in an ounce.
So if we went with Mark's guess, that's 350 ounces off a 10 kilo.
That's a big nugget. No, this one was over 680 ounces. So it was.
Oh wow!
That was found in the Kresik license, but it was back in the 1800s. But it just shows you, potential. What I may do tomorrow is dig that tweet out. It's bizarrely enough, I put that tweet out probably. ECR was languishing down. It was below a penny. It was about 0.7, 0.8 of a pence.
Okay.
And nobody really bothered. But I guarantee if I put that tweet out tomorrow, it might pick up some interest. Yeah, I'm not saying there's going to be more of those sort of nuggets, but you think, oh, that's not that big a nugget. But if you actually do the maths on that nugget, it's a $1 million nugget.
If I wasn't confident enough in ECR already, knowing you're in Kenny and your knowledge of Australian mining, you've made me feel 10 times more comfortable now. Thank you very much.
I'll find that tweet and you can retweet it or you can comment on it if you want. I'll send it after the podcast. In fact, I've even got pictures of it as well in the news article that goes with it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the company never actually. The problem with these kind of thing is, you know, the company, they could RNS and say, look, you know, it came to our attention that we've, you know, a nugget was found on the lead that is in within our footprint, but then they've got to go and probably spend some money to get a competent person to go and verify all the facts, and that probably costs, I don't know, let's say, well, $5,000, you know, to get a geologist to go and verify everything. Is it really worth it, you know, putting the RNS out? Yeah. But it just depends. There's other ways of putting the information out, so they could have probably done it other way. But the company are aware of it. I did point it out to the company the nugget was on their footprint. Watch this space, we sir.
Exciting times for sure. I mean, what are your guys' takes on the COVID stock still? I mean, I'm not in as many as I was, but I'm still bullish on COVID stocks. I think I know they've gone up a lot still, and some of them are reaching sort of all time highs. But for me, I still think that they have a good few months, maybe longer.
I think they do. I would agree. I mean, particularly if you look at what's happening now with the resurgence of COVID and that kind of panic, and also I think the fact that Donald Trump's in hospital, the markets don't like that kind of thing. But you know, we had that crash, didn't we, whenever it was sort of March time, and then you had all this money being made, particularly in COVID stocks. It could happen again, because it's still here. People are fed up with but think particularly in the UK, people are fed up with how the government's handling it, but it is what it is. That's the handling it as they are, and it's still very much here. And there's all this talk of we need, you know, things aren't going to change until we get a vaccine. So I think they're still very much going to be in the focus. Absolutely, there's still lots left to run in them.
It's still the only way that can get us back to any sort of normality. I said there's obviously a number of different testing stocks at the moment, and I'm not going to go into full details on them. Everyone knows who they are. But apart from sort of NCYT, who have fully led the way from start to finish and keep going from strength to strength, printing money, until some of the other tests get to market, we are sort of languishing in a little bit of Are we going to go into lockdown? Are we not going to go into lockdown? What's going to happen? But I think people don't realize that if these tests come to market that give you accurate antibody, so whether or not you've had it and they're available immediately, and potentially a rapid antigen test with saliva, where you could just go and buy it over the counter and you wake up one morning with a cough or a cold or whatever it may be, and currently you don't know what to do. Do I stay in bed? Do I go to work? If I go to work and cough, am I going to be sent home from work? I mean, no one knows what to do. And obviously we're moving into winter now where coughs and colds and sneezes are going to happen daily. So for me, the tests that need to come to market, that are coming to market, are game changing and are going to be the only way that we're going to find some normality again. Mass production potentially could be an issue because of the demand across the world is going to be huge. But if they can get the production going, I'm definitely of a believer that that the COVID stocks, all of the COVID, big COVID stocks, can still keep going.
What would you say are the sort of COVID stocks? What are the ones that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, I'm invested in Avacta. And that hasn't changed.
Okay.
That hasn't changed. I'm in Avacta from its early days, not as early as it could be. And it's been a little bit slow. Mm. I mean, I would have probably wanted a bit more progress than they currently had. I mean, the presentations have been great. Alistair, whenever he talks fantastically well. But they could probably be a little bit further down the line than they are. I think Alistair admitted to the delays on the last presentation. Not massive delays, but it's more them being held up than them holding things up, should we say. But they're the company that are bringing out the rapid saliva test.
Rapid test, okay.
Instant saliva test. And it's obviously known because it's been spoken about by... On the BBC News, on the daily briefings, there's been clues to this test. They're not saying that this test is coming, but they have said game-changing tests of saliva-based and sort of instant testing. I think ODX is another one. I'm not invested in them, so I've got no advice. Mm-hmm. But they seem to. I mean, they're tracking all-time highs at the moment, and they seem to be very, very close to getting their test out to market. And I know the holders there are very excited at the moment, and understandably so. I know I mentioned NCYT before, and they're flying and they're leading the way, and they've led the way from word go. I mean, personally, I'm happy that I was in from the early days. Mm. Would I still be buying them now? Yeah, because at £1.64 that Avacta is, if they bring out an instant test that's going to be sold across the world, they're going to be multi-billion pound company. So they're going to be multiples of where they are now. But again, nothing is guaranteed. So if they don't get that test to market, yes, they've got their cancer side of their business that will also do very well and bring in a lot of money, but that's not instant. So there will potentially be a hit to that.
Didn't we have Avacta on the research talks, Kenny?
I was just thinking about that,
We did with Alan Green, and he's confident they're going to go a lot further. And I think they're actually based in Wetherby, from memory, which when I used to live in, they are Avacta Life Sciences in Wetherby. And when I used to live in the UK in York, I mean, that's very close to me, you get these incredible sort of pharmaceutical companies just born out of a small sort of office somewhere in this little market town of Wetherby. And another one he mentioned was Destiny Pharma, another small company, only 24 million market cap at the moment. They might be worth a look as well. They're working on Superbug. Is it Superbugs? Yeah, like... MRSA, the superbug, isn't it?
Superbug
treatment, but also they're developing, I think it's a nasal spray, I think from memory, for COVID treatment. But what I liked about them was I had never heard of them, and they're quite cheap.
which is always
it's always good.
Which is always nice. I mean, another pharma that's done amazingly well is four D's, D, 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 D. I prefer to say ticker codes because people know the ticker codes better. Mm. But I think they've had the biggest rise since 1st of July of this year. I think they hit 40p, I think, at one point back in July. So I think of all the AIM stocks, they've had the largest percentage because I think they're tracking about £1.50 now or something like that. Mm. And they're to do with IBS. Again, a lot of people are in that. A lot of people are very excited for where they could go. I mean, yeah, pharma stocks have always been volatile, but if you catch the right side of them, they can absolutely fly.
Absolutely.
And I think there was a lot of shrewd investors that when COVID, I certainly never found the bottom of any of these COVID stocks, but there's a lot of shrewd investors out there that when COVID came to market, they obviously went straight on any research sites or whatever they could find, and they found the companies that were going to be involved, and I mean, had probably some of the have made these people millionaires. I mean, I'm sure there's been some incredible journeys in some of these stocks.
Yeah, I never actually. I'm trying to think from memory. I don't think I've dabbled at all in any COVID stocks, and I probably wouldn't, to be honest.
No.
I don't know. I'm a bit of a. I'm at the point now with COVID, and I know there's still people dying, and some of the measures they're bringing in are just getting ridiculous. You take a risk crossing the road or driving your car every day or whatever, and I think there's a lot of people now that are just at the stage, if you're vulnerable at your old age or you've got you maybe need to take precautions over the next 6 to 8 months or whatever. But look at Sweden, they just got on with it.
Mm.
They're older people, or they're people that underlying illnesses were looked after, and then the rest of Sweden just continued what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know.
Did you see the protests in Ireland? Have you seen this? People are they're all fed up with the restricting of freedom, and it's all, you know, there's a huge protest, like, give us back our freedom. This is what we fought for. So they've had enough of it. But
I heard Northern Ireland actually had quite a large spike, someone was saying.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had, I think it was 1,000 cases or something like that in a day, which is obviously quite high for them. So, like you said, it is still there.
It is still there, yeah.
Still there. It's not going anywhere.
No.
Like I said, for me, would I be investing in the COVID stocks now? I may not be throwing huge amounts of money in them, but I would certainly be. Mm. I'm happy that I'm in. I'm certainly happy that I'm in Avacta from where I got in, and I'm still in because I truly believe that they will get that test to market, and it will be game changing.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think we'll save the COVID debate for another day, because you could probably we've got an MP that's in the headlines at the moment because she decided to travel down to London in the train and then travel back up and go to the gym and go there. So, and she's still not resigned. So I'm not going to name what party she's part of, but. Yeah, you know, I see things like that, and I'm just saying, "Oh, why the hell are we tiptoeing about?"
Your lady's a bit. What's she, Sturgeon? She just likes to do the opposite of what Westminster does.
I think that's half the problem as well. There's so many different local and regional lockdown rules. It's just like, just let's crack on with life. You know what?
Yeah.
Just take the risk. You know.
So. Yeah, they're absolutely right. So, look, this podcast has been really good. This is over an hour. It's just general chat. I think we can do this a regular thing. This is quite sort of easy chat, I think.
Yeah. As long as my stocks keep changing, I'm in. Otherwise, I'll be talking about the same
ones. Yeah, absolutely.
Over and over, because I tend not to go, like, there's people that do podcasts out there and they know everything about loads of different stocks and can happily do a podcast about sort of different stocks. I tend to know a fair amount about the ones that I'm in, not necessarily sort of the wider markets, but yeah, for sure. I mean, a couple of things I just did want to mention, because like you said, the great thing about these podcasts is a lot of new investors are listening now, maybe more so because I sort of make a point of trying to protect's the wrong word, but maybe just give advice to new investors. I mean, one thing that I've mentioned a number of times on my Twitter chat and just wanted to mention again is, I'm not sure how much, I guess you guys don't have a lot of dealings in it, but is these Telegram groups.
I'm Mr. Telegram. You're talking
are you mainly on Telegram, are you, Kenny?
No, I'm on Twitter and Telegram, but no, yeah. I've set up a few groups in Telegram. I've set up the ECR Telegram group.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good.
I've never been a big fan of group, and to be fair, I set up a Twitter group recently of people that I speak to on a regular basis. It's not big at all, and there's been some tremendous picks so far, and everything's been very, very neutral as you'd want it to be. My issue with Telegram is that some of these groups aren't neutral, and what new investors need to realize is that some of these Telegram groups, you can't throw up a different opinion to the positive vibes that are put out in a Telegram group. So if it's on a specific share, and this isn't all specific shares, because like you said, Kenny, you've already mentioned that you've got one in ECR, so this is certainly not digging out your Telegram group or any Telegram group. But what people have to remember is, if there's a share chat for a specific share, most of the people in there are going to be shareholders of that share, or they're going to be very interested in getting into that share and probably into getting into it soon. So you're not going to have the counter arguments and the counterbalances in those Telegram groups. Everything's going to be rainbows and sweeties and everything's all nice. And I have heard of Telegram groups where anything counterproductive or negative, the admins are deleting the posts off the Telegram group, so they're not seen. If anyone says they've sold the share, they're being deleted. They just be careful of the Telegram groups that you're in, because there are rings of investors that are setting up these Telegram groups. And some of these Telegram groups are designed to pump and dump shares. And like I said, just really be super buoyant and positive about the share, which is great. But I think it's also good to have the other side of that as well, and have somebody say, no, hang on, what happens if this happens? What will happen to the share? And what happens if this happens? Or maybe the market cap's getting a little bit too high now, guys. Maybe it's gonna fall back a little bit, because do you know what I mean? I just don't see enough of that in Telegram groups. I'd like to take your opinion on that and what you think.
I always make them public. And the only times I've deleted anything is you usually get these guys that come on and then, you know, posting referrals for Bitcoin or cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I just block those guys and delete their posts, but I just let anything go.
Yeah.
The ECR one has been quite vocal. I'm not there to monitor it. I just set a group up and say, the group's here, have a chat if you want. And basically, anything I find that's interesting, the Nugget thing, I posted in there. In fact, I've just tagged you in the tweet about the Nugget for ECR. So have a look at that later.
Get that out. Yeah.
And I've posted up. What I like about Telegram is, the downfall of Twitter is, I think Twitter's great, but I think the bolt-on, the message facility was like a bolt-on they never really thought about. So Twitter rooms are not searchable. You can't upload anything other than like a picture or anything like that. You can't do PDFs, you can't do Word documents.
Yeah.
Whereas in Telegram, you can just go bang, bang, bang. Like, I think it was Empire Metals. I'm going back maybe 2 or 3 months ago. One of the guys that it'll be great to see historical reports of the, I think it was Mini Mini, which is like a PGM deposit in Australia. And I just banged out, I had them anyway on my desktop in a folder. I just banged them into the Telegram group, 10 of them. And the whole weekend it was just full of chatter.
Yep.
About all the historical reports. So it's good for getting information. It is,
and this is no way directed at all Telegram groups, because like you said, you don't even monitor it. There are groups that are monitored, there are groups that are manipulated and are used in a way to get a share sort of out there, like the Robin Hood effect, and I just want people to be vigilant and mindful that that not all these Telegram groups are what they seem to be, and take everything that you see and read with a pinch of salt, because I'm a big advocate for the other side of the story. Like you said, you can't just be fed with all the positives. Every share has its negatives, every share has its flaws, every share will have a reason why it could potentially drop, and those need to be discussed as well.
Twitter's probably a bit more public, although the rooms are not public. So the Twitter rooms and the Telegram rooms are not a million miles apart, to be honest.
No.
You can't, in fact, unless you're invited to a Twitter room, you can't join it.
That's correct.
So somebody needs to add you. But yes, a Telegram group, if it's made public, you can search for it, join it. So I can see your argument from some sides, but I just think Twitter's got similar traits to it as well.
It's groups in general. My apologies, Kenny. I mean, I'm not just singling out Telegram. It's just because I know there are quite a few groups on Telegram. Twitter's, like you said, Twitter's no different. Groups in general. My apologies. I probably should have just been a little bit more wider open with what I'm looking at. But talking about Twitter, I mean, I know we're going to wrap it up now, but one thing I just wanted to sort of finish on, and I'm sure you guys won't stop me from doing it, but now I've got, I suppose, a little bit more of a voice, is I'm a big advocate for mental health. Mm-hmm. And I've always suffered myself, but never hid away from the fact that I have. And I just want anyone listening or people out there just to realize that whether or not you're nice to everyone on a daily basis, which I know is near on impossible, or you're listening and you're one of those trolls that go around and abuse people, that not everybody is thick-skinned, not everybody can take the abuse, and luckily I may suffer with mental health, but I am quite thick-skinned, so I see a lot of things said about me, I read a lot of things said about me, and actually it's water off a duck's back. But not everybody has that support network around them. Not everybody has that same ability just to brush it off. And people just need to realize that social media is just getting more and more dangerous in that sense, that people are able to say whatever that they want without any consequences. You don't need to put your passport details into Twitter or Facebook or wherever it may be. You don't have to put your telephone number or address or anything. So you're basically undetectable. So that's what allows people to say whatever they want on these platforms. And I see a lot of it on Twitter, under share codes or whatever it may be, a lot of things being said. And I just want to take this moment just for everybody to realize that no, I'm not saying everyone should get on and live as one happy family, but before you abuse somebody, before you say anything negative, before you out somebody in front of thousands of followers or whatever it may be, just think before you do it, because the stock markets take enough of an effect on people's mental health. I mean, I couldn't even imagine what certain people may go through when they look at their portfolio and they're 50, 100, 150 grand down, whatever it may be. So we all go through enough looking at our portfolios and the swings and losing money. That is enough to bring you down without then going on a social media platform or Telegram or wherever it may be and then be abused by other people on there. So I just want to sort of, if we are wrapping up, I just want to sort of end on a note that just people just need to think a little bit more. And if they do want to talk, I'm happy to, my DMs are open, and enough people DM me on a daily basis. Maybe not so much about that, maybe more about stocks, but I'm certainly happy if anyone wants to ever talk about that sort of thing.
Nice way to end the podcast on sort of Sunday night. It's almost like a thought for Sunday. It was almost like back at, I don't know if you guys are maybe not old enough to remember, like Sunday school or Bible school. You used to have to go to that when I was younger. It was always like pause for a thought type thing. But it's all true words. Must admit, I've never really been trolled on Twitter. I don't know. Not recently. Perhaps back in the days of ADVFN, yeah. But Twitter, nah, I seem to avoid it at the moment. Yeah. But there we go. But no, it's great having you on.
Thank you again, guys. Really appreciate it.
And we'll try and do it once a month because, like I say, these chats, you think that's only about half an hour, but they've done an hour and 15 minutes already. So, yeah, I think that's long enough for this one anyway. But, appreciate the time, Eddie. Mark, have you got anything to finish up with?
Great. It's nice to have you on again, Eddie. Thank you. Yeah. And, words at the end, very, very poignant. Yeah, it's a very good point. So.
Yep. Okay, mate. Good. Thanks for your time, Eddie.
Yeah, and you. Have a great evening.
Thanks,
Eddie. Cheers. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.